This is Rob Heasley on the fifth day of April 2011. I'm a library trustee and I am here to interview Kurt Flowers, a public figure and a public servant in Parchment for a number of decades. What is your full name?
My full name is Curtis E. Flowers.
And you were born, Kurt?
March 29th, 1950, in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Very good. You live in Parchment today. When did you and your family move to Parchment, and why?
We moved here in 1970, and that was also the year that I got married. My wife is from the west side of Kalamazoo, and it was just through a fluke that we came to Parchment. We were going to live in married housing on Western's campus, and my wife's grandmother says, I have a friend, a Mrs. Ditos, who has some apartments out in Parchment. And they were the four beige brick buildings on the corner of Thomas and Riverview. And she suggested that we look at those. And so we looked at it, and we liked it. It was a nice starter apartment, one bedroom. And so we... when we got married, we moved into those apartments at 505 North Riverview Drive, Apartment 6.
Were you enrolled at Western at that time? Or?
Actually, I was going to KVCC.
KVCC, okay.
Mm-hmm. With the intent of going to Western.
Absolutely. Your wife's name is?
Linda K. Flowers.
And your daughter's? Your two lovely daughters.
I have two daughters, Jennifer and Emily. They are both graduates of Parchment High School, class of 91 and class of 97.
And your wife, Linda, was employed by the Parchment School District for quite a while.
Yes, my wife worked for 25 years for Parchment High School, and she retired as secretary to the principal.
What's your earliest recollection of our little city of Parchment?
The very first day that we came here, the very first person I met was Frieda Clock. She lived right behind the apartment buildings that we were moving into, and her husband Gerald were more or less the maintenance people of the building for Mrs. Ditos. And we got a key from Mrs. Clock, and she welcomed us to the city. And later on, we made arrangements with her for like to paint the apartment and stuff like that. So that was my very first encounter with someone from Parchment.
Do you recall your first sights of the city and all the activity around the mill and that sort of thing?
I think activity is the operative word. There was a lot of activity going on in Parchment. You know, there were constantly were cars changing shifts at the mill, so there were a lot of cars on the road, and it just seemed like a busy little community. Over the years, I kind of wished that I had seen the community house, which went down 5 years prior to our coming. So that was one of the things that I missed.
Yeah, I was here long enough to have seen and used the community house as a mm-hmm. as a young person, and it was a delight, and I wish it was still there today. It would have been a great addition to our community.
Yeah, from all the records I can see, it was a unique building.
What do you recall about the paper mill? You could hear it.
Oh, yes.
You could smell it.
And our apartment on Riverview Drive was on the second floor, and because it was a walkout in the back part of the apartment would be physically three floors up. And on a windy day, we would have our apartment windows open. And by the end of the day, there'd be little black soot on the windowsill. And we would have to dust just about every day, dust that soot off of the windowsill. So that's one of the things I remember about the mill. And also just the constant hum of it. We were close by, and you could hear it running. At night, if you had your window open and it was a quiet summer night, you could hear the high-lows going in and out of the semis, loading the cars, and every time they'd hit a corner, they'd have to beep, and you could hear all of that because you were close enough by.
You were from an early point in Parchment involved with the United Methodist Church, I believe.
Yes, we were married in Westwood United Methodist Church. That was my in-laws' church. And when we got married and decided that we were going to move to Parchment, Linda transferred her membership out here to the Parchment Methodist Church. And so we started there in 1970.
And the minister would have been at that time?
Jim Davis, I think, was the minister at the time. And he was there for a little while. And then we weren't too involved with the church right in the beginning because the part-time job that I had required that I work on Sundays. And so we weren't in church on Sundays for quite a while. It wasn't until a little while later. Mm-hmm. But I never realized that when we joined that church, it was only about 5 years old. It was a fairly new building. So,
you remember the other pastors? Have they come and gone since then?
Yeah, Jim Davis was there in 1970, and then he was followed by Gaylord Howell, and then he was followed by David Yeo, and then by Dan Miner, who is going to retire this year and has been there for 20 years.
Dan Miner's had a long run, hasn't he?
Yes, unusual for a Methodist.
For a Methodist, they like to move him around a little bit.
Yeah,
we just had the sad duty of attending David Yeo's funeral earlier in this year. And
I liked David Yeo. He was a very eloquent minister.
Yes, he was.
He liked the finer things in life. He wasn't a beer type of person. He was a wine type of person.
He was very cultured, wasn't he?
Yes.
You dabble in playing the organ for the church occasionally.
Yes.
Do I recall that?
It's always been a hobby of mine. I think if it were a different world, I probably would have been a church organist instead of a city clerk.
Oh, sure.
But yes, that's always been a hobby of mine. And I don't do it as often as I would like to, but Parchment is blessed with a nice pipe organ, which a lot of churches around here don't have. And so I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. You've also been involved in the administration of the church on boards, various boards
yes.
and things.
I currently serve as the treasurer of the church. I've been doing that for the last 15, 16 years now.
Okay.
And times are tight right now, as in a lot of places. But over the years, people have been very giving and have supported the church and helped maintain it nicely.
You mentioned just a minute ago that you had a part-time job back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Where would that have been?
I started out at Meyer Thrifty Acres on South Westnage in 1970, and I started out as part-time Christmas help. I was going to school at KVCC, and being a young couple, we weren't making too much money. My wife was working up at Western as a secretary for the dean of the graduate college, George Mallinson. But, you can always use a little extra money. And so I thought, well, I'll take this part-time job through the Christmas holidays, and that'll get us a little extra Christmas money. And that turned into an 18-year job with Meyer Incorporated, and also changing my direction in what I was interested in. I kind of had a science background and was going more in a science direction and started going in an accounting direction. And that's where I ended up there.
Okay. At some point, you became involved in city, or interested at least in city government.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall the date. Could you help me out there?
Oh, let's see. When did I get interested in city government? I think in the late 70s. Well, let's go back a little bit there. We purchased a house. We lived in our first apartment. And then we had a daughter coming along, and so we moved to another apartment on the corner of Devon and Riverview that had two bedrooms, and so we could accommodate the daughter. And then all of a sudden, second daughter was coming along, and we decided we needed a house. So in 1975, we purchased our home on Glengyle, 115 East Glengyle. We purchased it from Ben Gayhite. We purchased it from Ben Gayhite and his wife. I forget her name. Ben.
Their son was named Paul.
Yeah, their son was Paul.
Mm-hmm. Went to school with Paul.
Yeah. What was his mom's name? Let me see. Paul and... Mrs. Gayhide.
that's fine.
Very nice couple. And they were the original owners of that house. And we bought it from them in 1975. And at that point, that's where I started taking an interest in my surroundings. We were living in a neighborhood now. And I always liked living in Parchment because it reminded me of home, where I lived on the west side of Grand Rapids. We were a block from church, a block from John Ball Park. You went up to Fulton Street and got on the bus to go downtown, and the grocery store was up on Fulton Street. And Parchment reminded me so much of that we were close to the schools and close to church, and the Harding's Market was just down the street. You know, it just kind of reminded me of home. In fact, the bus comes down Riverview Drive if we wanted to go downtown. So that's what we liked about Parchment. And then as we lived there, I started taking an interest in the city. I think the first time I got involved with the city is I was interested in the park, and one of the current city commissioners at the time, John Bussema, and I worked on a park committee to make improvements to Kindleberger Park. And we went to the mill offices at the time. I think Frank Summers was the president at the time, and requested some money to put some new equipment in the park. And I think that's the first time I really got involved with it. A little bit, too, when in an earlier day we had the JCs, which was a service group. And a couple of years we did Santa Claus in the park helped organize that. And so I think that's where I got started. I had said earlier that I started part-time with Meyer, but then kind of went up the ladder a little ways, and then pretty soon I was traveling. And I thought I was traveling a little too much, but, you know, it was a good job. I thought... with the kids getting a little older, that I should maybe be home a little more and not travel as much. And at that time, a job opening came up for the city treasurer's position in Parchment. And I applied for that job and was given that job. And so I suddenly went from traveling for Meyer to being about a couple of blocks from City Hall. You know.
You were treasurer. Do you remember what year that was?
I started March 17th, 1987, and I replaced Dorothy Jezuak, who was the current city treasurer, and she was retiring at the time. And unfortunately, this year, Dorothy just passed away. So it would be 24 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But before you became the city treasurer, mm-hmm. you were elected to the city commission.
Yes, I was on the city commission for about 2 years. And that was while I was working. And I think that's what brought my attention to the city treasurer's job, because I was on the city commission. I was getting involved with city government, and it seemed very interesting. And I think that mainly was what prompted me to apply for the job, because I thought I really like the involvement
your
with the city and the people.
Your commission years were?
I was elected in November of 1985. And then I stepped down March 18th, 1987, to take the treasurer's position.
What do you remember in those first few days or first little bit while you were the treasurer? Do you remember your workmates at all,
mm-hmm.
co-workers?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Could you
oh, yeah.
talk about them a little
bit? Our city manager was Robert McConkie, and the city clerk was Richard Verdon. The gal at the front desk was Nancy Redman. She worked, at that time, she only worked 4 hours a day. She would work from 10 to 2, so that, and she would do the water billing and police records. And while Dick and I, then we could go to lunch. Ralph Herrick was the police chief. I think the biggest thing I remember when I started working, and Dorothy worked with me for a month before she retired, so we had a good overlap. But the thing I remember the most is that we did everything by hand. It was pre-computer days. And it was very short-lived, but I'm so glad that I had about a half a year of doing manual books. You know, we actually had ledgers and journals, and it was pencil and paper and adding machines. You know, there were no computers. I started in March of 87, and in July of 87, we got our first personal computer. And it was something our city manager was familiar with. I had never worked with personal computers before, just the big mainframe ones. We got a computer that was it had a 44 megabyte hard drive, and it was partitioned 33 and 11. So it wasn't a very big computer. most memories are bigger than that. Now, phones are bigger than that. And we started loading on the general ledger, and then about 6 months later, we got a utility billing program and started loading that on. And then about a year later, we loaded payroll on, and within the course of a year and a half, we had things on the computer. But when I very first started, we were still using the ledgers, and I still have those ledgers down in the basement because I just can't part with them. They're just like a old friend.
Wow. Do you recall any real significant or eye-opening incidents or situations while you've been here in Parchment? Which ones jump to your to your mind?
Oh, boy. Eye-opening.
An incident, maybe.
We got a lot of dead air there.
That's okay. We have a good editor.
Yeah. I you know, I guess I think of so many things as just a normal part of life. I think during the time that I was here, they built the post office. The post office used to be attached to the Harding store down on the corner of G Avenue and Riverview. And in 1986, I believe, they built a building down on the corner of Commerce and Mazel there, right by the bridge, and the post office moved there. That was an interesting event. When they built the what was formerly called Plant 12, built the new warehouse where the current Epic plant is now, and they built that warehouse, and then later on they turned it into the Epic plant. And I remember all the work that Bob McConkie did to create a proposal to get them to keep that converting plant here, because it could have gone to two other cities. And I was very impressed with that situation and how it ended up.
He was a very effective manager, wasn't he?
Yes, he was one of our better city managers.
Yep, that's absolutely. I agree with you. What do you remember in terms of earlier festivals and things in the park and that sort of thing? School associations, or.
I know we always, every year we did the carnival up at Central Elementary for the kids, and my wife worked on that many years, and I remember they used to always have a cakewalk, and you know the music would play and people would walk around, and then it would stop, and whoever landed on a certain spot received a cake, and they were always baked cakes that were donated by various parents and stuff like that. And I remember the first year my wife took that over as a volunteer, and she decided that it was just too much work for all the women to bake cakes. And so she went up to Bill Knapp's on West Main and priced the cost of cakes. And at the time, cakes were 75 cents. She got them for 75 cents, those nice chocolate cakes that they'd give away for free for birthdays, you know. And we figured it out by the time we bought the cake and then charged everyone a quarter to do the, we would get like 12 people on there, and so that would be 12 quarters. We were making quite a profit on those cakes. So we ordered 100 cakes, and sure enough, that was the best fundraiser we ever had. No one had to bake any cakes.
100 cakes. That's
100
terrific.
Cakes, yeah, and they went through them all. One of the things that currently is enjoyed by everyone is the Kindleberger Summer Festival. Mm-hmm. I remember we used to do things were kind of separated. The library would have like an arts and crafts fair every year. And then we had some groups that were trying to get the symphony to come in. And then one year, I remember the first year that the Kalamazoo Symphony played in Kindleberger Park. And at the time, I belonged to the service organization, the JCs, and we thought, well, this would be a good way to be a fundraiser. So we would camp on to this performance of the Kalamazoo Symphony, and we would run a little concession stand. So at the time, we contacted the Coca-Cola Company, and they They had little wagons that they would lend to you, and you would sell their product, and they got a profit, and you made the rest for your charity or organization. And the very first year that the symphony played in Kindleberger Park, it had to have been in the middle 70s, like maybe 76 or 77. Jan Wilson lived in town, and he was very instrumental in getting the symphony to play here. I remember the symphony started with the national anthem, and they played the national anthem, and I don't think anyone noticed that the dark clouds were rolling in, and then suddenly we had a downpour and thunder and lightning. And I thought, all this work and all we got out of the symphony was the national anthem, and then everybody scattered. And here we were standing in this metal concessions cart on the top of Scout Hill in Kindleberger Park while it was thundering and lightning everywhere, and I thought, oh, we're doomed. But it came out okay.
I remember that concert well. It was very short.
Yeah.
It was very short. Yeah.
But I think the Kindleberger Festival has evolved over the years. Like I said, Dan Wilson was very instrumental in getting the symphony to play. The library always had their arts and crafts fair. And then we had a creative lady in town by the name of Zen Campbell. And she liked to do theatrical productions, and she worked that in. And suddenly we had this cohesive festival that they brought all together. They brought the arts and crafts and everything together, and that's been going for almost 30 years now. So I think that's one of the nice things that has evolved in the city.
I quite agree, yeah. I had a visitor that year to our house from California, a person who was, this is the year of the thunderstorm,
mm-hmm.
a person who was not acquainted with thunderstorms.
Oh.
And she almost went under the bed. She didn't know, wasn't sure what was happening. But that was really, we've had pretty good luck over the years, though, with the weather, I think.
Yes.
A couple of wet times. Which,
yeah, and those were the days when there was an item called federal revenue sharing funds. And they came from the federal government, and they were just doling out money to cities and towns to make life better. And so many of those things that evolved, like the summer festival and that, were supported by those revenue sharing funds. And when they dried up, we thought, oh, maybe the festival didn't. But people kept doing fundraisers and, a nickel here and a nickel there, and the festival has survived over the years.
In the course of your employment with the city, had you any occasion to have talks or make acquaintances with Glenn Flam?
Oh, yes.
Glenn Flam was a longtime city manager and city employee. Mm-hmm. What do you recall about Glenn?
Glenn, when I was elected to the city commission, Glenn had just retired. The city manager at the time when I hired in was George Von Drock. And so Glenn, although he was the first city manager for the city of Parchment, he was the only one I didn't get to work with. I've worked with all the other city managers.
But you were able to get to know him a little
bit. Oh, yes.
In the ensuing years.
Yes, Glenn would stop by all the time and make sure everything was going okay. He just lived, breathed, and his blood ran for Parchment. And I remember they wanted him to stay on as city manager, and he was going to quit because his wife Phyllis had a bout of cancer that she was fighting, and he felt that that maybe time was limited and that they should that he should quit. And so I do remember the city commission saying, "Well, if you need a little extra time off, we'll give it to you." And Glenn stayed on a few more years after that, which was really good because he knew Glenn knew every sewer pipe and every drain in the city, every water line. I mean, he had been here since the beginning and just knew where everything was. And Phyllis got better, and so they were able to stay on for a little while longer. But then he retired. And oddly enough, when we very first started looking for a house, the first house we looked at was Glenn and Phyllis's house on Glendale. They lived right across the street from Parchment United Methodist Church in an English Tudor house. And they were selling it to downsize because it had an upstairs, and they wanted a single level house. And they were going to move over onto Parchmount. And our realtor took us through the house, and I thought it was a beautiful house. It had oak window seats upstairs, and had a finished basement, and it just had a nice character to it. And I was all set to buy it, and my wife said, "You can't buy the first house that you look at." And I goes, "Why not?" And she says, "Well, you can't. You've got to look at several other houses." So in the time we were looking at several other houses, someone else bought it. But it was odd that it ended up being, I had no idea it was their house when we looked at it.
Wow. Yeah. That's, as a matter of fact, my wife and I looked at that house at some point around that same time.
Well, my wife said most of the people that had the house after the Flams suffered like divorce or something like that. And she says, "See, that's what would happen if we had bought the house." And I goes, "Nah."
It, to this day, is a very nice house.
Yes, so. Yes. Yeah. But Glenn and Phyllis were just part of the original crew of Parchment, the founders. Glenn was very, very strict. It was his way or the highway. He was not afraid to raise his voice to someone if he felt it needed. But he was doing it, for the best purposes.
What do you recall about notable people at the schools? Superintendents, principals, who sticks out in your mind as memorable?
Well, Fred Hall, I knew Fred Hall through church and through the city later on. He was a superintendent for the schools for a while.
For a long while.
Yeah. And he was, when we'd go for a walk in the evening, him and his wife were always walking in the park. And you could always tell Fred and Esther Hall when they were walking in the park, because Esther was only like about 5 feet tall, and Fred was like 7 feet tall. So you see this big tall guy and this little short lady, and you knew it was Fred and Esther Hall. Very, very interesting people and very indicative of those earlier times of the 30s, 40s, 50s. I remember Jim Vanderweel. When my kids went to school, Jim Vanderweel was the principal of Central Elementary. And it was the same thing. Very, very dedicated to his job.
Yes.
I think it's interesting. We've had quite a few people that have come through here and have gone on to other jobs in other areas, and they've always talked well of their start or of their years that they've had here at Parchment. Jim Rickers was at Parchment High School, went to Portage Public Schools. Jim Korstange went out to Dalton. Craig Meisner went from here to KVISD. A lot of them.
Which city commissioners do you recall as memorable?
I took, when I was elected to the City Commission in November of 1985, I replaced Virginia Aldridge, who had served on the commission for several years, and her husband had also served as mayor of the city in earlier years. And I remember Virginia was a very, she was a combination of a businesswoman and a social woman. I mean, you would expect to see her picture in the society column stating that Virginia Aldridge poured at such and such a reception or something, poured the tea or something like that. But by the same token, she had good business knowledge, and when she was on the city commission, she had a grasp of things like budgets and costs and expenses. And being the first female city commissioner that we had, and also being the first female vice mayor that we had, she added a little temperance to the city commission, you know, first having a female on there, and up until then it had been all males. And so I really enjoyed taking her place and talking to her quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I remember people like Don Lent, who was mayor, Merle Wood. I knew Merle Wood very brief time before he passed away. Joe Sweets was a member of our church, and I knew him quite a bit, talked to him quite a bit. And everything was, during their days and their times, everything was so intertwined with the mill. You know, a lot of them worked at the mill, or their husbands or spouses or whatever worked at the mill, and everything was so intertwined with the city, the things that went on at the mill.
One of the notables that I recall, a notable city commissioner and mayor, would be John Balchi.
Oh, yes.
I know you remember John fondly.
Yeah.
I certainly do.
Yeah. Yeah, John was very dedicated. And let me see, who... Was it John Buscema who talked? I think it was John Buscema maybe that talked Balchi into serving on the city commission. John had to take a place. I'm trying to remember whose place he took on the city commission. Might have been Clyde Cuney's. Was it Clyde?
Barb Diggin.
Might have been Barb Diggin too. Yeah. He started out as a replacement for someone who had either stepped down on the commission. I'd have to go back and check the records. But he was only going to do it for that period of time. But I think the bug bit him, and he
just loved it, didn't he?
He loved it. John was one person I could always count on reading every bit of the commission packet. He would read it front to back, just like a newspaper. And was always prepared when he came to a commission meeting to make a decision. So in that respect, John was a product of the mill also. He worked in the traffic division for quite a few years.
What would you like people to most remember about Parchment?
It's neighborliness, it's cohesiveness. When Jacob Kindleberger started out back in the 30s, earlier than that, when he started out in 1909 and built the village in 1930, and then it turned into a city in 1939, he called it a model city. And over the years, we have we have called Parchment the paper city because they made parchment here and they made various other kinds of paper here. And while I, excuse me, while I still think Parchment is the paper city, because we do have some paper converting and that going on, and our heritage evolves around paper. I still think I would go back to what Jacob Kindleberger called the place, the model city. He wanted Parchment to be a good place to raise your kids, a good place to live and just have your life here, you know. I think it's getting harder nowadays in that the city of Kalamazoo has expanded, and whereas Parchment was removed from Kalamazoo, now our borders are right next to each other, and it's hard to tell where one flows into the other. But I think over the years we have still strove to keep our identity, and so people know when they're in the city of Parchment and when they're in other places. And so I think I would like people to remember Parchment is a model city, like Uncle Jake said.
That's terrific. That's a pretty good way for us to close. Okay. Kurt Flowers, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.